In this second lecture, we will contrast and compare two experiences of spiritual ascent, which Augustine describes in the Confessions. If you drop down on this page to the section we've already looked at, Christ the Food of the Strong, Book 7, Chapter 10, and then continuing down it, past the text that's very brightly illustrated, where it says, "The Food of the Strong am I," you'll see that there are only brief snippets given from Chapters 11, 12, and 13. This is because in these sections of the Confessions, he's giving us the result of his own contemplative and philosophical speculation. He is considering creation. He is, as it were, allowing philosophy to do as much as it can for him to tell him about the world and about God. And so in chapter 11, he says, "I viewed the other things that are beneath you, and they are real insofar as they come from you, but they're not real in comparison with God." Then he begins to meditate a little bit on the nature of evil, and he will do this more later, that all things are good insofar as they are created, even if they are corrupted. And he is suggesting here that these are insights to which he came before his full reconversion back to Christianity again. In chapter 13, there is no such thing as evil, and even in your creation taken as a whole, there is not, meaning that there are things that do not, as he puts it, harmonize with others. There is a harmonizing and interrelationship in creation that is the goodness of creation, and evil's, if you will, a destructive quality is a failure of or a rejection of this capacity for harmonization. Then in chapter 17 of book 7, and there's a blue bar that says he ascends from solitary contemplation of creation. Well, that's exactly what he does here. He marvels, he says, that "I now loved you," and no phantasm, no kind of a, no sort of a symbol or a false notion instead of God, but he says, "I was not stable enough to enjoy you steadily." He would have these experiences of exaltation, of contemplative union, transported by his beauty, and then presently torn away from you by my own weight, sinking with grief into lower things. And the weight, he says, was carnal habit, his indulgence of the senses, and again probably the moral problem that was existing in his life, not having married the mother of his son. So he then goes on to reflect in this same paragraph, how is it that I can appreciate the beauty of bodies, celestial and terrestrial? And he is effectively looking at creation, and then we have a description of this journey upwards. After the next blue bar where it says, "to solitary contemplation of the Creator," he says, "by degrees I was led upward from bodies to the soul, and from thence to the soul's inward faculty." From bodies, from physical objects, he perceives the soul, the animus, and then there is something even deeper than the soul. There is an interior power, an interior faculty, interiorem vim, he calls it. This is that to which the bodily senses report. Now, even beasts, that is to say other animals, have this inward faculty, but we have, human beings have, the rational or reasoning power, ratiocinatum potentiam. There is this reasoning ability, which is yet another level higher, and he's attempting to, as it were, contemplate on the basis of this. And he says, "then this reasoning power within me finds that it too is mutable, it too is changeable. I ascend to something even higher, to what he calls the intellectual principle," within this capacity for reason. This would be the equivalent of the Platonic or Neoplatonic nous, the innermost level of the self, usually translated in Latin as intellectus, the part of the self which the Christian theologian philosopher will identify with the image of God. So with this part of himself, this highest part of the self, he is, as it were, attempting to look up towards God, and then he says, "and thus, with a flash of a trembling glance, it," this innermost self, this intellectus, "arrived at that which is. And I saw, as it were, your invisibility understood by means of the things that are made." So he has a glimpse of God from, if you will, abstracting upwards from the creation, having looked at things that are made, including the spiritual things that are made. But I was not able to sustain my gaze, my weakness was dashed back, and he says, I lapsed again into my accustomed ways. And this is a reminder of the fact that both in the Neoplatonic tradition and then in the Christian appropriation of this and in the Christian ascetical tradition, the capacity for contemplation is predicated upon the capacity to live a life in accordance with the gospel, to allow one's external actions to reflect that which one contemplates. In other words, it's not just about seeing, it's about allowing that to be incorporated into your doing as well. So one's moral life has consequences as far as one's capacity for spiritual vision is concerned. And he says that it was at this point that he was not yet able to sustain this vision or not fall back into sinful ways until, he says, I had embraced the mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. And if we recall from Augustine's biography, it was during this experience of his inward reflection and agonizing that around the age of 32, he hears a story of two individuals who were converted by reading the life of Saint Antony. He looks at Romans 13:13 that invites him to change his ways, and hears a voice. He's not sure if it's the voice of an angel or maybe just children playing next door saying, Tole Lege, take up and read. That's the invitation to take up this text from Saint Paul, and that gives him the final push, the final victory. And he then goes off to Casiciacum into this reflective, meditative retreat, and is then baptized in the year 387 at about the age of 33. Now, the following year, he returned to Africa, but before his return, he has an experience which we find recorded here in the Confessions, in Book 9 and Chapter 10. And here again, here also, we have a notion of intellectual ascent, of spiritual or contemplative ascent to God, but this time it's not solitary. It's not just Augustine longing for God in his own intellectus. This occurs as a result of shared experience. This is after his conversion to Christianity, which has really rejoiced his mother's heart. His mother, Monica, will die before being able to return with him to Africa. She dies in Ostia and is buried there. And this is an account of an experience they have just before Monica's death. He says, as the day now approached on which she was to depart this life, a day you, namely God, knew, but which we did not, it happened that she and I stood alone, leaning in a certain window from which the garden of the house could be seen, and here we were resting ourselves, and he says, we were conversing alone very pleasantly, forgetting the things that are past, reaching forward towards those things which are future. We are learning, yearning, discussing what lies ahead for us, namely heaven. They are discussing the nature of the eternal life of the saints, which eye has not seen nor ear heard. The classical passage that's used to remind us of the fact that although we are called to discuss it, there is that about the heavenly kingdom which defeats our capacity to even speak about it. And he uses the phrase, we open wide the mouth of our heart, thirsting for the streams of your fountain, the fountain of life, which is with you, that we might be sprinkled with its waters. And we'll see this phrase occurs much later in one of his homilies, in which he shares with the people this sense of spiritual ascent. Again, this is not simply Augustine turning inward and then seeking to look outward. This is in dialogue with another believing Christian, one of the most important believing Christian for him, his own mother, who is now so ecstatic, so delighted that she's seen him become a Christian. And he says, as our conversation brought us to the point where the highest of physical sense and the most intense illumination of physical life light seem in comparison not worthy of comparison or even of mention. And there's a picture here of a medieval manuscript illumination of Dante and Beatrice ascending to the sun. There's this whole series of beautiful images from Christian contemplative literature of people who in dialogue with one another are enabled to see the joys of the heavenly kingdom. Benedict and Scholastica, Augustine and Monica, and then, as Dante describes it, his own experience through the help of or the mediation of Beatrice. But here Augustine says, we lifted ourselves with a more ardent love towards God, and we came at last to our own minds and went beyond them, that we might climb as high as that region of unfailing plenty, where you feed Israel with the food of truth. And he goes on, and we won't look in detail at this description, but it's a beautiful opportunity to reflect on the possibility of shared contemplation, of a spiritual ascent that occurs and is heightened and deepened because two believing Christians are sharing their hope, their desire, their longing for heaven, and the burning faith of their own hearts. This is an even deeper and richer experience than the solitary experience that Augustine had before his conversion to Christianity. And as we'll see, this is, one could regard it as the basis for, or a kind of a model for, what he will then do as a bishop. If we drop down now to chapter 27 of book 10, we've jumped considerably ahead in the Confessions, just to a very beautiful poem or poetic crying out to God, in which Augustine, in a sense, rediscovers the value or the beauty of the spiritual senses. Here, analogically or allegorically, he says that that all of his senses have been overwhelmed by, and in a sense have been brought into a perfection by, the experience of knowing God. And he begins, "Late have I loved you, sero te amavi, O beauty so ancient and so new. You were within and I was without, and it was there that I sought you. I rushed around these beautiful things that you had formed. You were with me, but I was not with you." Remember, he's reflecting on his past experience of trying to ascend just from the created into the a notion of the Creator. "These things kept me far from you, although they didn't exist unless they were in you." And then he says, "You called and shouted and forced open my deafness." God working through the analogy of sound. "You called and forced open my deafness. You gleamed and shone," the analogy of vision, "and chased away my blindness. You exuded perfume," an analogy of the sense of smell, "and I drew in my breath, and now I pant for you. I tasted, and now I hunger and thirst," analogy of the sense of taste. "You touched me, and I burned for your peace." So all of the senses, which Augustine would say that he is misusing, are now a kind of spiritual means by which God deepens this longing and this desire, and even this capacity to respond to God. Now let's look at two sermons from Augustine's later life as a bishop. When he returned to Africa, his intention was to found a monastic community, and he did live in monastic retirement with some friends for a time, but on a visit to Hippo he was more or less dragooned, more or less compelled by the people of God to accept ordination to the presbyterate, and then within a short time, within a few years, he was made the bishop assistant, the coadjutor to the then bishop, and within a year he was sole bishop of Hippo and remained bishop for a number of decades. And it is from this very fruitful period of his episcopal administration that we have many of the homilies which he actually preached. Now, in Sermon 128 on the Nativity, we have a lovely example of how here in the Latin tradition, the tradition that we often associate more with Greek Christianity of theosis, and indeed of the Eucharist as a means of this divinization which God bestows on us as our means of sanctification, we have it here in St. Augustine. He reflects in that highlighted text that I've got red lines around, "God became man, factus est Deus homo, so that man might become God, ut homo fieret Deus." He's quoting probably or is echoing Saint Athanasius, who says the same thing. God became human so that human beings might be divinized, so that human beings might become God. And then Augustine makes this a Eucharistic metaphor, so that man could eat the bread of angels, the Lord of the angels became man, became human today. So this beautiful phrase about the incarnation being for our divinization is also an incarnation so that we might partake of Christ. And again, we remember a kind of an echo, cibus prandium, I am the food of the strong. If you eat of me, I will make you what I am, that insight that Augustine had had so many years before. Here, he is sharing that insight with the people of God in the context of a sermon on the Nativity, which is included in the Liturgy of the Hours, and so it's a part of the liturgical reflection the Church gives us today. If we can drop down to the next red bar and look very briefly at one of his sermons on St. John's Gospel. Here we find a fascinating echo of the experience that he had with Monica. Only here, it is as a bishop that he is sharing his experience with the people of God, and in that sharing, they are together advancing in a kind of spiritual vision and a kind of contemplative experience, very redolent of what happened there in Monica's last days, which Augustine so poignantly records in the Confessions. He records these beautiful phrases about the fact that we are light, we have become the light of the world. Christ then is light for us, but we become light, and he invokes the image of the Transfiguration. He speaks, namely Peter speaks in his epistle, of a voice that came from the supreme glory, you are my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. This reflection or meditation within the New Testament back on the Transfiguration. So he says, because we were not present there, Augustine says this, and did not hear that voice, we have a more certain prophetic word, the word of the Scriptures, and yet, he says, there will come a time when even the Scriptures are to be laid aside. He says, all Scripture will be taken away from us, which in the night of this world burned like lamps, when all these things are removed as no longer necessary for our illumination, and when the men of God by whom they were ministered to us shall themselves together with us behold the true and dear light. Again, no longer a solitary experience of contemplation. It is those together, those who ministered to us, and we together with them behold the true light. Now, for Augustine, contemplation is an experience within community. It is something that the Christian community does together. The ultimate contemplative experience in heaven will be to gaze together as community upon the glory of God. That will be what we saw with Monica, what eye has not seen nor ear heard. And then a beautiful phrase which he had also used, didn't he, in the Confessions. He says, in the beginning was the Word was with God. You, meaning the people of God who have been sprinkled with dew, with the baptismal water, will come to the fountain. The same phrase, the same kind of imagery that he uses to describe his experience with Monica. Now he's using this as a way of exhorting and uplifting the people of God. We are the sons of God, and it's not yet been disclosed what we shall be. And then at the very end, I am about to lay aside this book, and you are soon going away, each to his own business. And in the phrase above, I feel that your spirits are being raised with mine to the heavens above. He says, again in concluding, it's been good for us to share the common light. And this is perhaps a good way of ending. Augustine, the man who experienced a longing for the light, who found it within Christianity, who discovered that this experience of the light was something that could be shared with other Christians and deepened in the sharing, now makes his preaching, his liturgical ministry and his pastoral preaching ministry, an occasion for sharing that, so there can be a mutual lifting up into this beautiful vision of the God who is our eternal destiny.